market,
the S&P,
the ASX stocks.
This is Motley Fool Money.
Welcome to Motley Fool Money, the podcast that is immune to all forms of psychological bias and has self-selected a few bits of research to prove just that.
Oh, God.
I'm Andrew
really?
Page. I know. And with me is Scott Phillips.
G'day, Andrew. G'day, Phillips. We've started off with the nerdiest of nerdy jokes. Tell me there's a reason for
it. Mate, we're going to get very nerdy this week. And the reason
is... That switching sound here is people turning off. Oh, fast forward. How do I get to the next one?
Don't do that, because...
We will make it interesting, I promise.
For our fellow nerds out there, we are celebrating the fact that the latest Nobel laureate for economics is a guy that we greatly admire and has done some great work in the field of behavioural finance. So we'll talk a bit about him and his work matters.
Fake news. I'll tell you why in a minute.
We keep trying to get away from certain topics, Scott, but there are some that keep coming back. And this week, it's Bitcoin. We had a really interesting story throughout the week. Some poor sod has sold his house and put everything into Bitcoin. And we're just going to talk about just how sensible or otherwise that might be.
And whether poor will be the operative word.
That is exactly right. And is it too good to be true? Is there easy money to be made in the Mantra takeover? So we'll talk a little bit about what's happened there and whether or not there is free money lying on the ground for you to be able to take. Short answer, no, there's not. And Scott, you're going to get on your high horse?
Indeed I will.
Full
saddle up.
Full sound effects again.
Cowboy hat, spurs, the whole lot.
Excellent. Now, mate, tell me a little bit about a gentleman called Richard Thaler.
I thought you'd never ask.
Hit me.
You know what he's not?
What isn't he?
He's not the Nobel laureate for economics.
Oh. What did I get wrong? What did you get? What do you? Is it too late to start again?
No, it's not too late to start again. Okay. Here's the thing. There is no Nobel Prize for economics.
What do you win the prize for then? No, I didn't.
So there is an economics prize given in concert with the Nobel Prizes, but the economics prize is not officially
a
Nobel Prize.
Right. Yes, yes.
There you go. We've already started on the nerdiest nerd level.
I remember
that. It gets better from here.
And there's a bit of a checkered history there as well, because there are past winners of that prize who have gone on to blow up vast sums of money.
Unlike Alfred Nobel, who blew up large things.
Is exactly right.
That's right. He was so guilty about what he did. He founded a prize for peace and science and medicine, all sorts of good stuff.
So, some good out of some bad.
But you asked me about Richard
Thaler. We're getting way off topic here, and we've only just started.
Indeed.
What a terrible start, mate.
I don't know about that. I think most of our listeners think, oh, they're on topic. That's impressive. That's unusual.
That's unusual.
So, here's the thing. Richard Thaler is the father of behavioral economics, but he's not really.
No.
So, you might have heard of, or you certainly heard, our listeners have probably heard of Danny Kahneman and Amos Tversky. Now, those guys were, believe it or not, psychologists who stumbled across what was now known as behavioral psychology.
Mm.
And basically what they kind of stumbled on was the way we make decisions. And really they gave lie to the very supposition that we all had previous to that, that humans were rational beings.
Mm.
Now, Richard Thaler has taken that and kind of Tversky and Kahneman took us close enough. Thaler's picked that up and run with it.
They got some great books.
And he's turned it into behavioral finance. Mm. And this is where for us as investors, it's a really, really important thing. Thaler basically said, like that research from Kahneman and Tversky, we're not rational beings. And so there are things, A, you should be aware of, and B, most importantly, things you can do to stop the our monkey brains, our reptilian brains, those parts of our brains that don't let us make good decisions.
Mm.
And he's won a Nobel Prize for it, which is pretty bloody impressive.
It's such fascinating. It's one of those things that is just really obvious when you hear about it. I mean, who on God's green earth thinks that humans are rational in any kind of sphere, let alone economics and finance?
I've seen reality television, mate. I can tell you for a fact there is no rationality in humanity.
But having said that, for 100 years plus, that was always been the assumption. This is what a rational economic agent would do. Therefore, this is how the economic system should function, et cetera, et cetera. And it's just not so.
Luckily for our readers, our listeners, I should say, this is not going to be my rant, so I won't spend long on it. But this is the folly of economics. Starts with the assumption that everybody is rational and nothing else changes. So if you start with that, the old ceteris paribus, to use the Latin, all else being equal, and they say, well, if all else is equal, this will happen. It's like, yes, that's true, but all else is never equal. And the fiction that was portrayed for literally decades, probably over a century, was let's assume everything's rational, everything else is equal, and then to work out what would happen, because it fits mathematical models really, really nicely.
Oh, it's great, yes.
And it wasn't until Kahneman, Tversky firstly, and then Thaler most specifically recently, have taken that and really run with it to bring it to light and give us some tools and some ways to not even avoid it, but try and manage it and try and deal with it the best way we can.
And there are some really cool experiments that they've done. Some very poor, unfortunate graduate students in various laboratories around the world being subject to all kinds of funny kinds of tests, which just sort of, conclusively shows just the irrationality of humans that are out there.
I want to tell you a story, mate. There's this has been done many, many, many times. So I'll talk about the the apocryphal version, but the reality is behind it. Students of behavioral finance, behavioral psychology, go to a class. They are told at that lesson about the bias of anchoring. They are told that what will happen is if I give you a number, once that number's in your head, you can't get away from it. No matter how they spent the entire lecture telling them this was going to happen. Then they said, write down your phone number. Write down the last two digits of your phone number.
Version I heard was your social security number, but same kind of thing.
It's apocryphal. Work with me here. Write down your phone, last couple of digits of your phone number. Then pick a number between 1 and 100. And inevitably, the number was closer, depending on how high or low your number was, the number you chose was higher or lower to that number, even though you were asked to pick a random number.
And even though you were told, hey, there's this thing called anchoring, and this is what it happens.
These are uni students who just spent the entire lesson being taught to avoid this, and then they did exactly that when they were asked, even though they knew it, they rationally knew it. They knew it.
Mate,
but the monkey brain, the reptilian brain, doesn't let us escape that unless we forcibly make it.
Mate, I can totally empathize with that. I've been a big fan of this for a long time. I am very well aware of a number of biases. We'll go through a few in a moment.
So give us your bank account number now, and we'll see if we can get it. No? Okay.
No. I don't have a bank account, mate. It's all in Bitcoin. It's all in a virtual wallet.
Oh, there we go. We'll get there in a minute.
We'll get there in a minute. But it is. We'll go through some of our favorite ones or least favorite ones, depending on your perspective. And I'm so overtly aware of them. And yet, it is a daily struggle to not fall prey to them.
And I think just quickly before we do go into it, that is the key, right? As an investor, the key is not to, I mean, we should try and avoid them, but the success is not avoiding them altogether because you're never going to. And that's, you know, many, many people in the industry try and promise perfection. They promise conviction. They promise, you know, the more certain you sound, the easier it is to sell your product.
Yeah, totally.
As an investor, that's just a highway to hell because once you make a mistake, you feel like the whole game's over.
Yeah.
So what we do is basically say, we know these biases exist. We know we'll fall victim to them. Let's try and do it as infrequently as possible and to the least extent possible. And that's success. If you try for 100 and zero result, you are going to come a cropper. And frankly, you'll probably give up. It's recognizing, you know what, like those uni students, we are going to fall victim from time to time. Recognizing, being aware of it, managing for it, those are things that help.
Yeah, and planning for it, having systems in place to deal
with
it.
Right, right.
With that in mind, Mr. Phillips, what is your favorite /
I know I'm in trouble when you call me Mr. Phillips, and I'm about to cop something.
That's right.
It's like mum.
It's like if I use your middle name.
Yeah, exactly.
Scott Robert Phillips, what are you doing?
Jeez, sorry.
Mate, what's your favorite / least favorite behavioural bias?
The one I think I am, I'll pick the least common of the two, actually. One I particularly like, or like to think about, is recency bias.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of not so far from the anchoring stuff we talked about before, and that is people are most likely to assume the most recent past is representative of the future.
Right.
And it's kind of, one of my favorite phrases around this one, you've heard this many, many times, is that generals tend to fight the last war.
Yep, great.
Now, if you ask some generals in 1922 how to fight a war, they would talk about their experience in World War One, and they would improvise and improve that.
Yep.
World War II comes along, it's all very different. They go, shit, okay, better change that.
Yeah.
Out of World War II, they had a really specific way they were going to fight the war. Next time it happens, we're going to do it this way.
Yeah.
You end up in Vietnam with the guerrilla war.
Yep.
And so things change, and generals tend to fight the last war because that's their most recent experience. You try and perfect the past rather than looking forward to the future.
And it's so applicable to markets because what will happen, and the most recent sort of, you know, disaster, I suppose, is obviously the GFC.
Yep.
We look at that. We've lived through that. We have that experience. So we look through that lens and we expect that the next disaster will look very much like the last.
People have spent the last decade looking for the next GFC.
Yep.
When the GFC happened, people were looking for the next Asian financial crisis.
Yep.
When that happened, they were looking for the next dot-com bust. When that happened, they were looking for the next 87 crash.
Yeah.
None of those were, you know, there are similarities.
History rhymes, but it doesn't repeat, as the famous saying.
So there's some similarities in terms of the causes.
Sure.
But if you're looking for the next housing subprime meltdown sovereign debt crisis, it's very, very unlucky that's the cause of the next one. What about you?
I tell you what I am a sucker for
is
confirmation bias.
I agree.
So I
We did a boom tish sound effect.
Liam, there's your project for the week.
I'll work on it.
He says as he rolls his eyes.
Yes. That's code for listeners. You'll thank me for it later. I have no intention of doing that whatsoever.
That's right.
It'll only encourage them.
So confirmation bias is, and this happens in politics, perhaps even more so than finance, but it's this idea that we seek out information that reinforces our existing belief.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say, as an example,
hypothetically, if you thought housing was expensive.
If some guy thought that housing was a little unreasonable at the moment, and I'm scanning the newspapers and I see an article saying, housing's really expensive.
Yep.
I am going to look at that. I am going to read it. I am going to quote it. I'm going to forward it to all my mates. I see another article the same day that says, actually, not too bad. And here's a bunch of reasons why you don't need to worry. immediately I poo-poo that, I put it away, and it is insane. All it does is you will, especially in this information age that we live in, mm-hmm. you will find whatever evidence is necessary to support your crazy theory. A mate of ours in the office the other day was talking about the Flat Earth Society, you know? And again, if you want to jump onto the web, you will find quote-unquote evidence that the world is flat. You will find it. It is there. And it is really, really, really dangerous. I would say as an investor, one of the things I really try to do is if you and I both like Blackmores, for example, you're the worst person to talk to. I don't want to talk
Thanks,
to you
dude.
Because, well, we're just going to say how smart we all are. You know, I need to find the guy who hates it, and I need to talk to him about it, because that is where I'm going to learn. That's where I'm going to probe my own thinking, and that's where I'm potentially going to avoid a disaster.
Right. Two quick thoughts. One is a quick tangent. Mm-hmm. My favorite thing in recent times was when Twitter went from square images to round images.
Oh, yeah.
And so the Flat Earth Society's logo went from square to round.
It was just brilliant.
Anyway, that was kind of generally fun. But speaking of house prices, and this is interesting, we have a Skype chat amongst the guys at work, as you well know, mate. And to your point, the articles that we tend to share with each other on house prices are almost always the ones that confirm our pre-existing, see, I told you, right through the spectrum, everyone from house prices are horribly overvalued to it's not a problem, and everywhere in between, the ones, we that's not always the case. We are reasonably fair. But I would say if you stacked up our views on house prices and the next move for housing and the articles that we share, it's a pretty bloody good
correlation. It is a very dangerous echo chamber. We're very well aware of it. You know, I guess the take-home message is here is seek out the counter view. Go in with an open mind. Doesn't mean you have to flip-flop every time you see a point of view that is different from yours. Right. But take it seriously and consider it. And because, you know, the market is not about, you know, preserving one's ego. It's about trying to build wealth. And you know, that kind of thing is just going to be a big snag in the works.
I'm going to do one more bias very quickly. And that is...
Oh, just one more? We've got so many.
All right. We can do more if you want. Liam will wrap us up when we've run out of time. When this podcast stops halfway through, you know Liam's lost interest and just turns it off. Anchoring. So anchoring is the tendency to basically take either a past or occasionally a future arbitrary point and say, that's how I'm going to consider and compare my outcomes.
It's the one I see the most when I'm speaking to other investors.
And when the shares get back to the price I paid, I'm going to sell.
Yeah.
As soon as those shares get to $2, I'm going to sell.
Yeah. Why $2?
When I've doubled my money,
that's what I paid.
I'm going to sell. Yeah. If I lose more than 10% of my money, I'm going to sell.
Yep.
Those arbitrary numbers are completely and totally irrelevant. They are useless for anybody who's considering their financial reality, their financial expectations. Shares don't know what price you paid. There is no magic or otherwise, frankly.
Market doesn't know.
In a round number or a price you paid, the price you want to sell. If I double my money, I'll sell. All that kind of crap.
Yep.
And it just makes you do bad things.
Yep.
If you double your money in investing, you go, I've doubled my money, great, I'll sell. So why? Yeah. You know, if the shares then halve or double after that, that's the one you want to... If it's going to double again, why would you sell?
Yeah.
It's going to go half. Of course you would sell, but neither of those depend on whether or not you hit 100% gain or 95%, 105%.
Yeah.
It's just arbitrary anchoring. We set these things in our minds. And again, this is...
Well, it works. I just quickly... What's the other way as well for people who haven't bought? So you think,
I really
want to buy XYZ. It's gone up 50% since I last looked at it. So therefore, I can't buy it because I'm anchoring on this irrelevant price from the past.
Or the flip side, by the way. We have half our members who don't buy our recommendations say, it's already gone up. It's too late to buy now.
Yep.
The other ones say, it's going down. Why would I buy it when it's falling?
You're right.
They're both wrong. There is no value in that anchoring.
Well, they might be right, but right for the wrong reasons.
For the wrong reasons, exactly. And that's the key story. So, you know, looking back, this thing about biases, right? We're not criticizing or condemning anyone for having these biases or being susceptible to them.
You're a little psychopathic if you don't have
any
biases.
This is the result of evolution.
Yeah, so you've got them. We've all got them.
We're not trying to say you're bad if you think this way, or we are saying you're wrong, by the way, but not in a judgmental way.
Yeah.
Our aim here is to highlight these. Richard Thaler won his prize. And these are the sorts of reasons why, once you know these things, you can get a better handle on how and what you do.
Can I do one more?
One more.
Hindsight bias.
Hindsight bias. I knew you were going to say that.
Hindsight bias is something
I knew you were going to say that.
I nearly missed that. Yeah. So
that's my best line of the day,
hindsight
mate.
Bias is one of those things that just really gets my goat in the markets. Because there is always a Harry Hindsight out there that will tell you after the fact that they knew X, Y, and Z was going to happen. Funnily enough, they didn't necessarily take a position that would have made them profit on
that.
They
just knew it was going to happen.
They knew it was going to happen. And it's just really, really delusional. And I kind of think it's one of those things look a lot more obvious in hindsight than they do. Mm. Let's look at the GFC, for example. Mm. We brought that up before. Now, you talk to anyone, and I mean anyone today, and they will say, yeah, oh, it right. is so obvious.
Of course it was going to happen.
Of course. Look at the debt levels, these resetting mortgage rates and blah, blah, blah. All of the kind of stuff that we all know well, and it is perfectly obvious, perfectly understandable. But almost by definition, it wasn't at the time. If it was, it never would have happened.
Not only that, I knew, to your point about the resetting mortgages, right? I remember during, it must have been 2008 early, I suppose, listening to a radio program on exactly this thing.
Yeah.
Just the R mortgages, right?
Right,
Adjustable resettable mortgage, whatever they're called. Anyway, and the rates were going to go up. This was known. I listened to a radio broadcast or a podcast, probably not a podcast back then, it would have been on radio probably, about it, heard the program, went, that's interesting. I wonder if that'll cause any problems.
Mm.
Now, of course, it caused the GFC, right? Had I been a little more prescient at the time, I might have realized the facts were out there. No one, including the greats, were getting out of investments. You couldn't have known.
And there's a whole bunch of other biases at play there as well.
Right, right.
You know, as to why that was the case. There's one of those ones that's like a social proof. If every expert under the sun is saying, don't worry about it, and the biggest and brightest fund managers out there are all buying, and the investment banks are like, well, not everyone is going to be, not everyone can be that wrong. Ergo, it's not something to worry about.
Right.
And the one guy who sort of picked it from the movie of The Big Short, you know, is the crazy dude. I'm trying to use my words sensibly here, who just looks like a nut job at the time.
When I said move on, that was to avoid you saying nut job.
Oh, it could have been worse.
Okay. So look, we will talk about a bit more about Richard Thaler, I think, in the future. His best known book is called Nudge. The UK has a nudge unit, famously in the UK government. There are things that people and governments and policymakers can do to help save us from ourselves, and that's probably worthwhile. Overcoming these biases is normally about doing something around putting a pre-commitment device in place to avoid these sort of mistakes.
Oh, that is an interesting
topic.
We'll
talk about that another
day. We will come back to that.
Motley Fool Money. Financial advice for real people, not trust fund hippies. Sign up for the newsletter at fool.com.au/MMM.
Let's talk a little bit about Bitcoin again. I think we've made it, our views,
shall we?
Ridiculously clear. You know,
there's two good reasons why we want to talk about Bitcoin though, mate.
All right.
The first is it's hit $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
The second is what adjective should I use? Courageous.
Bold.
In the words of US Minister, let's call it a courageous decision.
Yes.
To sell everything he owns,
move
to a campsite, plow it on all the Bitcoin, and then, hey, just wait.
And then
the rest will take care of itself.
Yeah.
His millionaire status is confirmed. All he has to do is sit in the tent and wait for the phone call.
Here's the thing. We can sort of laugh and say, geez, that's a little bit risky and all the rest of it. But there's kind of stuff like that, to lesser degrees, perhaps, happens all the time.
Mm.
But what will statistically inevitably happen is that there'll be plenty of dudes that do this and then make a gazillion dollars.
So he told you.
And it becomes this sort of
confirmation bias. It is
all of those kinds of things.
Yep.
Where you say, and I've done it. There was a mate of mine, no names mentioned, who last year came up and said, "Oh, I've got this really hot tip." It was a speculative mining company.
Never made any after this year.
No, well, anyway, I won't go. It was everything about this investment.
Pull out.
Was a disaster. Right. And I really like the guy. He's like, mate, just don't. Like, honestly, there is so many things that could go wrong for this to go right. You know, it is one in a million. So you can guess what happened, right? Yeah. It went from 0.1 cent up to 50 cents, and he just made $1 billion. So, you know, next time I catch up with him, he's like, yeah, good advice. And what do you say in response to that? It's like, well, yeah, I clearly got it wrong. But it's that fuzzy logic. It's like the guy who goes into the casino, puts it all on black and wins, and therefore says, you know, ergo, that was an eminently sensible thing to do.
Yep.
And you are going to get a lot of stuff like that. It is one of the biggest dangers that we see in investing. The worst thing that can happen to a new investor is that they make really, really good returns in their first year.
Yeah,
now, totally. That sounds really counterintuitive. I mean, isn't that what you want to do? Isn't that the kind of experience you want to sort of get you started on your investment journey, to pique your interest, to have a good experience, to reinforce that activity? The trouble is, if you've been right, but right for the wrong reasons, if you get play Russian roulette, you probably play it 5 times out of 6 and you'll be perfectly fine. But it's not a smart thing to do. If you play,
keep playing that.
You do the probability on it. So, okay, you know, one roll of the chamber, odds are in your favor. Do it twice, odds don't look so good. Number three, after you've done it 20 times.
You're in my favour. I've one chance of killing myself out of six. I'm not taking your
Well, own. Maybe that's not the best phrase to
but
use.
But I take your point.
But, you know, if you were to do that 100 times, it is almost almost certain that something is, you know. You're going to get a new paint job on the walls is basically what's going to happen there.
Nice.
So I think that is the lesson that we need to sort of reinforce here in terms of what's happening with this Bitcoin guy is that we can't look at one isolated bits of evidence as proof as to the success or savviness of a particular strategy.
I think that's exactly right. Whether he's right or whether he's wrong, this is pure speculation. There is no fundamental basis for valuation or analysis.
Yep.
And so realistically, if you want to speculate, that's fine. That's one
thing. Yeah, a bit of fun.
But know what you're doing and realize. By the way, though,
don't bet the house literally like this guy has.
The whole thing about a bit of fun, those people who say I'd go put $10 on a horse on the first at Randwick on the weekend, that's a bit of fun.
Yeah.
Those people say I'll buy $5,000 worth of some speculative miner and have a bit of fun. It boggles the mind that people somehow think because it's shares, it's somehow legitimate.
Yeah.
And so I can 50x my or 500x my fun money.
Yeah.
Madness. It's such a large amount of money.
Anyway. And it becomes a game of chicken, too. So let's say he's right. And let's say over the next year it goes up another 30%.
Mm.
Well, you've got to sell to profit from it, right? So you exactly. think, well, if I made 30%, maybe I could make it. Maybe it goes up for the next few months. And it comes a point where, it'll all come unstuck.
Mm.
And so you've not only got to time the entry in, but you've got to get the timing of the exit exactly right. And just so much can go wrong. So
indeed.
Don't do it.
Please.
Real money advice from real people. Not just a couple of dicks with a Porsche. Get more at fool.com.au/MMM.
Mate, let's talk now. Let me set a scene here. I want to talk about Mantra. They are a listed hotelier. They own the Break Free brand. They own the Peppers Resort. Mm-hmm. And they, of course, own the Mantra brand. They own hotels and resorts all over the country.
Indeed.
Full disclosure, it is a company that you and I have both liked and both recommended in the past.
We have.
And we're happy to say that because it's gone very well. And the reason it's gone very well is because they received a takeover from the European hotel giant Accor.
Mm-hmm.
So shares shot up massively.
They did.
Now, we don't really want to talk about that too much, but what we did want to talk about was some of the dynamics that are at play here and that you will see again and again. So let me set the scene. Accor's come out and said, we want to pay $3.96 for every Mantra share that is on issue.
Yes.
The share market was much closer to three at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, it jumped very high on that news. But here's the thing. The share market didn't go to $3.96. Now, this week they confirmed that this takeover, the board has fully endorsed it.
Yes,
they have. What's the word for it? They've signed a commitment. The legals have gone from me. But basically, it's going to happen. We've got every intention for this to happen. We recommend you vote your shares in it. It's going to happen.
So Accor said we want to do the deal. Mantra said, yep, we agree. In the absence of a better offer, we're
fantastic.
Sweet.
And then you look at the share. Now, shares are still trading, right?
Yes.
Now, shares are on the market at $3.85, I want to say, last time I sort of looked. Maybe $3.88, something around that.
Yep.
So there's this concept called arbitrage, which says, well, I know it's going to go through at $3.96, right? So why don't I buy it on the market now at $3.88?
Mm-hmm.
I'll wait until the takeover comes through. I'll sell it at $3.96, almost guaranteed money for jam.
Yeah.
And yet you issued a sell recommendation on the back of that. Riddle me that, Mr. Phillips. How does that make sense?
And here's the thing. So whenever you're talking about any sort of takeover, the word arbitrage comes up.
Mm-hmm.
And arbitrage in its purest form means free money.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of think, well, hang on, I can buy the shares today for $3.88.
Mm-hmm.
I can sell them later to the takeover Bob for $3.96.
Mm.
It's not a lot, but it's free money. And if you've got a guaranteed 8 cents, that's 2%, give or take.
Yeah.
You take that, right? If it's literally guaranteed money, why would you say no?
Yep.
There's a couple of good answers.
Okay.
The first is that despite everyone's best efforts, there is nothing legally binding about the takeover.
Could fall through.
Now, the shares are up about 25%, give or take, mm-hmm. since the takeover was announced.
Mm-hmm.
And you can be pretty sure you'll give almost all of that back should this thing fall over, because mm-hmm. there's no other, at the moment at least, counter bidder.
Yep.
So the market's firstly saying, well, we think it'll happen.
Yep. But it should happen.
But if you had this, if you played this game 10 times, the chance that one or two of them fall over is pretty high.
And it might not be through lack of desire. It might just be the ACCC says, we're not comfortable.
Accor round of money. There's a major financial crisis between now and then. And the then is important.
Foreign Investment Review Board. You name it. Accor gets into some financial strife of its own and can't go through with it. There's a whole bunch of reasons why it might not go through.
Right. But the then is important because the then is the 30th of June.
Ah, wait a sec. Where are we now?
Well, we're only in October.
Okay, so that's 8 months.
Right.
So wait a sec. So you're saying that I can guarantee...
I can hear the wheels turning already.
Make 2%...
the grinding noise.
over 8 months.
Yeah. Not so good anymore, right? So exactly, and that's the other thing. So if you think about the market on average going about 10% a year, now there's no guarantee it will in the next 8 months, but that would be an average of maybe, what, 7%, 6% over that period of time?
Yeah.
So automatically you're taking what might be a more certain 2%, not 100% certain, but more certain potentially than the market necessarily going up, but the time value of that money is worth something. It's probably not worth the difference. And so when you think about 388 now and taking away the risk of it not going through, the fact I've got to wait 8 months for the money, and you start to think that 2% all of a sudden doesn't look so flashy.
It doesn't look
now. That's
so
why, by the way, the shares are at 388, and they'll they'll trickle up very slowly because some people will say, "I'll happily take that bet."
Yeah,
there's no, you wouldn't pay 396 now, so no one is.
Yeah,
the market already works out what a reasonable price is, and this is the other thing with arbitrage. Just because you think it's a great idea, if everyone else in the market's already considered it and set a price for the shares, you want to be sure you're taking a contrarian view and you're right when it comes to this. Otherwise, the market's probably priced inappropriately.
Yeah. Speaking of biases, superiority biases, right? You sort of you look at something like that and go, look how clever that is. What could possibly go wrong? And, you know, lo and behold, those kind of things can go wrong all the time. So
I can't believe there's other people think they're more superior than I am, because I'm definitely more
superior. I know. It's just ridiculous, isn't it?
Isn't it?
Get more Motley Fool money advice at fool.com.au/MMM.
Get on your high horse, Mr. Phillips.
Do I have to?
Yes, you do.
I'm kidding. Of course I want to get on my horse. Here we go.
There we go. Here, boy. Here, boy.
That's a dog, dude.
All right. It's a boy dog. It's a boy horse. Sorry. Oh,
here,
God.
Boy. Here,
just
boy.
Go.
You grew up on a farm, didn't you?
Shut up.
All right. So here's the thing. Here's the thing. We have seen another week of knuckleheads and morons out there in the press making stupid predictions. I think I probably ran on this before. I'm guaranteed.
Pretty
certain.
Sure. I'm pretty
sure. I'm
going to
do
have.
It again, just quietly.
I think just over breakfast and last time I saw you, the time before that.
I meant on the podcast.
Oh, yeah. Okay, right.
You're probably right there too. Here's the thing: we have so many smart people being so stupid by making these dumb predictions. I'm going to mention again Professor Steve Keen, who I know you're a little bit partial to, Ram, but Professor Steve Keen, for what, 10 years, has been waiting for the house price crash.
I think it's longer than that now.
He sold his inner city Sydney apartment for $400,000, waiting for the price to fall so he could buy back in.
Yeah.
We've had people being negative on China since 2011. Mm. We've had people waiting for double dip recessions since the GFC.
Mm.
We're now only, we're about a month away from the pre-GFC high point.
Mm.
Thereafter, it goes down.
Actually, if you factor in dividends, we're already there.
Right. So you think about that story, right? This is the... And so we've got people making these bloody predictions. We had Sachin Das come out, who's a very smart, well-read, educated guy, who again, for the umpteenth time, is predicting market catastrophe.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still bloody wrong, and they don't stop. And of course they get the headlines. As I heard on the radio the other day, the headlines are never plane lands safely. It's always planes going to crash, right? And so you think about that. And it's not the headline writer's fault.
Mm.
If I write the story of, don't worry, market's not going to do much, just go back to you. Daily work. No one clicks on that. Everyone clicks on the market going to crash, prices going to fall, housing bubble going to pop. And it's
but
just...
Hang on. Yes. People have said that before.
You saved me from swearing. Thank you. I was about to.
And been right or hit something. people have said that before and been right.
How many times?
And people have said that before and actually had really cogent, sensible arguments. And, you know, frankly, isn't it good that there are some people out there, you know, acting as the canary in the coal mine to sort of say, hey, everyone, we need to take a breath and a step back here. Maybe things are getting a little crazy.
So here's the problem. There is no discernible difference between the sensible, thoughtful, smart argument that's right and the sensible, thoughtful, smart argument that's wrong.
Mm.
If you're going to take, or if you're going to try and cherry pick just the few that are right, I read the example the other day. If you're going to a doctor for a cancer diagnosis, you're not going to go to someone who got it right last time or who has been right about half the time. You want to go to someone who's going to give you an expectation based on the evidence and say, there is a very high probability I'm right, and here's why.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who picked the GFC, you mentioned him earlier in the podcast, he has no track record before that. Sachin Das, who's come out now, was right back then, hasn't been since. The next guy, by the way, who's right about the next catastrophe, whatever it is, will then have free drinks for the next decade until some other crisis comes up.
Mm-hmm.
Who's talking about the guy who predicted the 87 crisis, the Asian financial crisis, the dot-com crash?
Yeah.
Nobody.
Yeah.
And they're right once. So imagine you got one thing right once.
Yeah.
You know, you tossed a coin, you called a heads. Hey, Andrew's the great new coin toss caller. Let's go on, you know, put him on the front page. Andrew Page says coin will come up
fails. I think you said the great tosser there for a second. So
you said it, right, not me. You're not going to see that. Right. So, you know, the thing is, these arguments are, we've talked a lot about biases, right? Mm. One of the big biases we have is we feel the pain of loss three times greater than the joy of gain. It's a biological reality. Mm-hmm. So when someone says, market going to crash, we all go, oh, geez, I better do something. I better pay attention. I better do something about this.
Loss aversion.
It seems smart. It seems thoughtful. Pessimism always seems smarter, and yet they are continually wrong. Now, you ask the question, should we ignore it? No, of course we shouldn't. Mm. Take the information, take the rationale, and consider it. Mm. But ignore the prediction part. That is a complete waste of time. Statistically, these guys are wrong so far more often than they're right. Mm. There is no other business on this earth where you would get a job with the prediction success accuracy rate they've got. You just wouldn't. You walk into a job and say, I'd like a job, please. Yeah. I was right once. Really? Yeah. How about the other times? Oh, no, I was wrong then. But I was right once.
Can I just say, too, for the sake of balance, that argument goes both ways. Because for every doomsayer out there, there's you know, it's never going to rain kind of guy who is, you know, it's always going to be rainbows and lollipops and things are just going to be brilliant. And that is equally spurious. You know, and what we see it all the time, too.
I'm going to challenge that.
Well, I know what you're going to say.
How many people are
out
there saying that? When was the last time we saw a headline saying, market analysts,
let me finish. So you're on Sky Telly quite a bit, and I guarantee you next time that
Monday,
you are 4
p.m.,
on there,
Channel 602 on Foxtel. Tune in,
record it, share it with your friends.
things at the screen.
At the start of the year, you'll be on there.
Yes.
And every presenter that you're on with will say, Scott, where is the market going to be at the end of the year? And you're a pretty optimistic guy. You'll probably give a higher figure. And you'll give one because maybe you feel as though you're compelled to. Actually, I'm looking at you now thinking, no, there's no way you're going to say that.
I was going to say, I hope you're building a straw man for me here because you know full well, when I've been asked by Carson Scott, who was a challenging interviewer at best.
Oh, yes.
Who says, where's the market going to be? I say, mate, I've been doing this well and truly long enough to know that trying to give that prediction is completely nuts.
My point is that any kind of specific near-term
prediction...
The point
you're trying to make that you're wrong about.
Is any near-term specific prediction, negative or positive, mm-hmm. is just as spurious. So what we need to do is get away from the specific in this game, because you're never going to be able to forecast the future specifically. Generally, you'll be okay, and the more time you've got on your side, the more odds are in your favor. But whenever you see prognostications of near-term disaster or near-term wonderful returns, they're equally spurious. So tread carefully.
I'm going to leave you with some wisdom that I read on Twitter this week.
That's okay.
Because I wrote
that happen?
Because I wrote that wisdom.
Okay, all right, of course.
It is more profitable to be optimistic and occasionally wrong than pessimistic and occasionally right.
Oh, nice one.
How good's that?
Get that on a t-shirt.
Put that on a coffee cup.
Yeah, fantastic. Mate, we've gone again over time. You know what? Let's just say that we're going to do 40-minute podcasts and then we are not going to ever be over time.
Exactly. We've saved you time, listeners. Thank you very much for
thank you. Except
helping
then we'll go for an hour. remember, don't forget, you can subscribe to Triple M Motley Fool Money podcast.
And you should.
Android podcast app or iTunes, whatever you prefer. And please, if you would be so kind, give us a nice big fat rating. It helps spread the word and helps build our audience and spread that foolish message.
And tell your friends, if you've just spent 25 minutes listening to us carry on like knuckleheads, there's a fair chance your mates will probably like it too. So tell them about it. Look up Triple M's Motley Fool Money on one of those podcast apps. Do yourself and do them a favor. Plus, go to fool.com.au/Triple M.
Brilliant. Until next week.
Fool on.
The Motley Fool and people appearing in this program may have positions in the companies mentioned. General advice only. Please speak to your financial professional to understand how it may pertain to your situation. Subscribe to the free newsletter at fool.com.au/MMM. The Motley Fool operates under Financial Services License 400691.